Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Kiddushin Daf Yud Beis. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a specially marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage and then go to option 2. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief formatted introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's shiur begins 10 lines from the top of Daf Yud Beis, or if you prefer, the first wide line of the Gemara. Ubeis Hillel Omrim Bepruta. We saw in our Mishnah a machlokis between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel as to what is the minimum amount that qualifies for kesef kiddushin, the money that you would give to a woman in exchange for her agreeing to marriage. On the side of the Gemara, we have a topic heading, kama shove pruta. How much is a shove pruta? The Gemara discussion will center on coinage that was, of course, familiar to the time of the Gemara. So, with that in mind, we continue in the text. Sovar Rav Yosef Lemeimar Pruta Kol Dehu. Regarding what Beis Hillel says in the Mishnah, that the Kesef Kiddushin is a Pruta, it's Kol Dehu. Rashi, across from here, a couple lines up, says Kol Dehu, Kol Ma Shadoros Mishanim Es Hamadbea Pomim shepochasin, pomim shemosifin mimishkolam. No set amount. Whatever the generations consider a pruta, sometimes it might be larger, heavier, weightier, sometimes lighter. That is Rav Yosef's opinion. The Gemara continues with Abaye, who disagrees. Omar le Abaye. And he raises a question. You'll notice it lasts a couple of lines. Within the long question, we've highlighted with a house marking the names Rav Dimi and Ravin. When each one has come, they have come from Eretz Yisrael telling us what their opinions are. So, Omar le Abaye, v'ho alo katoni. But regarding our Mishnah, we have a source that says, kamo hi pruta, and how much is a pruta? Echod mishmoina b'isra talki. 1/8 of an Isar Italki. Italki, we might assume or associate with Italy, the Italian Isar. So a pruta has a fixed amount. 1/8 of an Isar Italki. V'chitemo hani mili b'doro shel Moshe. You might say that is of historical truth. In the days of the generation of Moshe, that's how much a pruta was. Aval hocha, but nowadays, it's whatever people consider. That's not true, though. When Rav Dimi came, he told us, Shier Rabbi Simoi Bedoro, Kamo Hi Pruta. Rabbi Simoi estimated how much is a Pruta, and the result was Echod Mishmona Be'isur Italki. In fact, it's the same as what we saw in the Tanaic source. And V'chi also Ravin Omar, and when Ravin came, he says, he lists a number of rabbis, 3 Rabbonim, Rabbi Destoy, Rabbi Yanai, Rabbi Oshaya, Shiaru, Kamo, Havi, Pruta, how much is a Pruta? Echodmi, Shisha, B'Isar Hatalki, 1/6 of an Isar Hatalki. So you see from here that the Pruta has a fixed amount, and that fixed amount is what we just saw reported. And not as Rav Yosef claimed, called who, that it's a constantly fluctuating amount. Amale Rav Yosef. So Rav Yosef responds to Abaye and he says, according to the statistics that you gave us, how are you going to resolve that with the following Tanaic source? I hachi hainu detanina, seva chashov kama prutos b'shnei slaim, go and make a calculation. How many prutas are in two sela? A sela is a large coin, relatively speaking. How many prutas would you find in two sela? Yoser me alpayim. The Tanaic source says you'll find more than 2,000 prutos in two sela. But according to what you're saying, hashta alpayim lo havyon, yeser me alpayim kori luhu. According to your calculation, there's of course a given, and that is that we know how many isars there are in a sela. And with that, Rav Yosef says to Abaye, according to the numbers that you gave, you're not going to come out with even, you're not going to get up to 2,000. How can the Tanaic source say that there's more than 2,000? Omar Lahu Hahu Saba. So there was a sage, an elderly sage, that came and said, Ano Tanino Lo Koroiv Laupayim. I don't teach the source like you quoted it, more than 2,000. That's a mistake. Rather, the source says close to 2,000. So Rav Yosef responds, though, Sof, Alpha v'chomesh mea v'talsin v'shisa hu dahavion. According to your calculations, you're going to come out to 1,536 prutos in two sela, as the Gemara will prove later on. But Rav Yosef's point is that however you learn the source, more than 2,000 or close to 2,000, your numbers are way off. The Gemara answers, the number 1,536, which corresponds to the numbers that we saw according to Rav Dimi and Ravin, the number 1,536 is accurate, and it conforms to the source that says Korov Lapayim as well. Kevan de Nofke Luhu Mipalga, since the number 1,536, the 36 shows that it's over the 500 mark, so it's close to, it can be described as Korov Lapayim Kori Luhu, Kori Lei. Let me read that again. Kevan de Nafke Luhu Mipalga, since it's more than a half. In other words, the 500 represents, you could say, the number 1,000, which would be, if you divide it into two, so you get 500. Since the number 1,536 is beyond the halfway mark between 1,000 and 2,000, it's closer to 2,000, the source says, Korov Laupayim. And that's what the Gemara means when it says Korov Lapayim Korile. It's referred to as Korov Lapayim. So as a result of this discussion, Abaye justifies his point of view against Rav Yosef. According to Rav Yosef, Pruta is fluctuating, depends on what generation. You can have very small Prutas, and he thought that he had a basis in a source that says you'll find more than 2,000 prutos in two sela. But Abaye responded, along with the Hahu Saba, who pointed out that Rav Yosef's version of the source was inaccurate, and we've justified the numbers. And now the Gemara gets into greater detail. Gufa. And here we quote the two shitas we saw that we marked off with the houses, ki osa ravdimi omar shir of smoy bedoru kama havi pruta echod mishmoin v'sutalki. He calculated there you would find more than 8 prutas in an isur talki. You know, you would find you would find 8 prutas in at one isar. Ki osa ravin omar shiru rabdu stoy rabiane rabushan kama havi pruta. They calculated how much would a pruta be. Echod mishisha b'sutalki, 1/6 of an isar ha'italki, the Italian isar coin. Omar le Abaye le Rav Dimi. Rav Dimi was one of the spokespeople regarding how much a pruta is. Abaye addresses Rav Dimi, and we have here a long question. Nemo at v'ravin b'plukta d'hani tanoi kamaflegisu. Should we say that you and Ravin are actually arguing along the lines of a previous Tanaic disagreement. At the end of this long question, you'll see Rav Dimi responds, and if you skip down to that line, you see Omar Lei, Rav Dimi will respond and says, Bain, Didi, Bain, Ravin, Aliba, de Tanakama. We both say our shitas within the Tanakama, and we'll have to account then for their difference. In the meantime, Abaye sees that the numbers Rav Dimi and Ravin gave us seem very much like the numbers we will see in the following Machlokes Tanoim. Desanya. Pruto she'omru chachamim. Echod mishmone b'sitalki. That's very similar to what Rav Dimi said. If you skip to later in the source, we've underlined Rav Shimon Gamliel, and at the end of the source, go to the end of the frame section, you see it says, Nimsa pruta achas mishisha v'isar hatalki. And it would seem that Ravin's opinion, who said it's one-sixth of an iser, would seem to conform to Rav Shimon ben Gamliel. And within the source, there is a great amount of detail, coinage. All of these things are not familiar to us, unless you've had experience with Babylonian currency, or let's say Talmudic times currency. Could be that in Eretz Yisrael they had these coins as well. After all, the Tanaic source reflects the Torah learning of Eretz Yisrael in a large part. So the source says, "Pruta shamu chachamim echad mishmon v'sitalki." One pruta is an eighth of an iser talki. And now we revert back to large coins and we go down in a descending order. Sheish mal kesef is a dinar. You'll find six silver mal in a dinar. It's pointed out, if you study the Rashi, we have a little chart also on the side of the numbers, and the information in the chart is based on things that you'll find in Rashi as well. It just so happens that there are four dinar in a sela, but we're not in this source, we're not dealing with the sela. We mentioned before, why do I make reference to the sela? Because earlier we saw a source that said in two sela you have 1,536 prutas. Let's continue in the calculations. One ma is shnei punyonim. One punyon is shnei isrin. Isar, shnei musmisin. Mismis, shnei kuntrinkin. Kuntrink, shnei prutas. Now, if you factor all these numbers together, then nimsa pruta achas mishmoina b'sar italki. You notice we've dot underlined the word Isser, so you can use that as a focal point. You'll find that each time you were advancing in the coins, you were reducing it by a half. So from the Isser till you get to the Pruta, you will find that the Pruta is just 1/8 of the Isser. Rav Shimon ben Gamliel Omer Shloisha Hedresin Lema'a. Hedresin is a type of coin. There are three hedresin in a maw. And there is a given that there are six maw in a dinar. We made mention of that earlier in the source. So we continue. Shnei hinsin lehedris. These are all names of coins. There are two hinsin in a hedris. Shnei shimnin lehinitz. Shnei prutos leshimin. And nimsa pruta, when you calculate the relationship here between the pruta and the larger coin, you will find that the pruta is achas mishisha be'iser ha'italki. Now, as we were presenting Shulam Gamliel, there was really no direct mention of an iser. The source did make mention of a pruta, but if you look in Rashi, just a couple lines down from here, Nimtza pruta echad mishisha, sheha iser is echad mi 1/24th, chavdalet is 24, so it's 1/24th bediner. And iser is 1/24th of a dinner, ke de ko amris, as was mentioned. That was in the Reisha, you would have been able to discover that where the Mo'a and Iser were mentioned. Avol haprutos gedolos mima sha'amris. The opinion of Shulam Liel would seem to indicate that the prutos are larger than what the Tanakhama said. Shadiner sheish ma'a. One dinar contains six ma'a. V'ha'ma'a gimel hedrasin. And one ma'a is three hedrasin. Hare yudches hedrasin ledinar. And therefore, one dinar will have in it 18 hedrasin. V'heim shloishim v'sheish hinsin. V'heim shivim u'shnayim shivnin. V'heim kuf mem dalet. That's 144 prutos. Chelkom l'chof dalet chalokim. If you take 144 and you divide it into 24, that's the relationship that you'll find between the pruta and the isar. So you will find timtsa shisha b'chol chelik, six parts in each section. Hare sheish prutos l'iser shu echad michov dalet bediner. Now let's go back to the Gemara. Lema demor omar ketana kama. This is all Abaye's presentation to Rav Dimi. Should it be then that you go like the Tana Kama, which had one pruta being 1/8 of an iser? For Ravin diomar ke Rav Shimon ben Gamliel, who said, Ravin who had said 1/6 of an iser, that is what Rav Shimon Gamliel says. Omar le, Rav Dimi responds, bein didi ubein Ravin aliba de Tana Kama. Both of us are within the opinion of the Tana Kama, namely that one dinar equals 192 prutos. So how do you account for the variant value of an isar? For lo kashya, hada eiker isuri, hada zol isuri. The isar is what fluctuates in value. Hada eiker isuri, if the isar is expensive, kum esrim va'arba bezuza. You will find that there are 24 24 iser in azuz. Azuz is a dinar. So you'll have 24 isar in a dinar. And as one dinar will get you only 24 isar. And if that is the case, you will find the isar, as we said, is expensive. It will contain 8 prutos. If you find it convenient, just multiply 24 iser times 8 prutos, you'll find 192. 192 prutos in a dinar. Ha de zoil, the opinion of 6 prutos per isar is because the value of the isar went down. Kum talsin utrain bezuza. If the value of the isar went down, so instead of what we said before, 24 isar per dinar, you'll find 32 isar per dinar. If you find 32 isar in a dinar, how many prutos will be per isar? 6. Once again, multiply 32 times 6, and you'll find 192. So that, as far as Ravin and Rav Dimi are concerned, there's no machlokas between them. They are both reflecting the opinion of the Tana Kama, that there are 192 prutos in a dinar, and why each one said what they did. One said 8 prutos in an isar, that's at a time that the value of the isar went up. And he who said 6 prutos per isar, that's when the value of the isarim went down. On the side of the Gemara, we have a topic heading. And it reads as follows. Din Shel Shmuel. We've noted Shmuel with a rare marking, the firebox. Damekadesh Isha Beparit Misuyam. A person who marries a woman using an item. V'eno Borosh Ushavet Prutakan. And it's not clear whether in this location where the man married her, the item had a pruta value to it. Shmuel says, Chayshino Shema Shavet Pruta B'mokom Acher. We are to suspect that maybe somewhere else the item has a pruta in value. Now the Gemara. Omar Shmuel, Kitsha B'tomorrah. A man marries a woman, giving her a date that grows on a palm tree. Afilu omeid kur tomorrow bedinar mekudeshes. Even if a kur is a very large amount of dates, and you could buy a kur of dates for one dinar. That's a very cheap rate. So that the per date value is going to be less than pruta. Shmuel says she's married. Why? Chayshino shema shava pruta b'modai. We suspect that in Modai, which is another country, foreign country, where dates are not plentiful, in Modai, one date is worth a shava pruta. The Gemara asks, how can you have an opinion like that, where basically anything you give a woman might be sufficient because somewhere else it has the pruta value? For anan tanan, but our Mishnah taught Beisilol Omrim bepruta b'shava pruta. A woman is married if you give her something worth a pruta, and not if you give her something worth less. But according to Shmuel, even if you give her something worth less, it might be a shava pruta somewhere else. Lo kasha ha bikidushe vaday ha bikidushe safek. There's no contradiction to Shmuel from the citation of the Mishnah. If you want to establish a definite kiddushin, then the item that you give her must be worth a pruta where you are giving it to her. We'll say right here where you're giving it to her. And if you are giving her something that's worth a definite pruta right here, she's married to you. And if someone else comes and offers her kesef kiddushin, it won't take hold because she's married to you in a definite way. Ha b'kiddushei safek. What Shmuel is talking about, that you have to suspect that it might be worth a pruta somewhere else, giving her something like that, that right here is not worth a pruta, but somewhere else it's worth a pruta, that creates kiddushei safek. What does kiddushei safek mean for us? That means if someone else were to come and give her a definite pruta worth of value, the woman will not be allowed to be with him because maybe she is married to the first guy. She'll need to receive a get from both gentlemen. The Rashi points this out. Ve'im eino shove pruta bimkomo. Well, let's read the Rashi together, four lines from the bottom, where he says, and if the item given to her is not worth a pruta where she is, kiddushei vadai lo havu, levatel kiddushei sheni. We don't achieve a definite kiddushin that would render void a second person's kiddushin. Avol kiddushei sofek havu. What happens, though, is that she's considered doubtfully or possibly married to the first fellow. V'eino muteres li'achir below get. She will not be allowed to anyone else unless she gets a divorce from that first fellow. The chayshinon shema shava pruta b'modai v'shiur ahani l'das elu hein kedushin gemurin shemeachar shekirish b'pruta b'mekomon. What Rashi just said is that an amount, the shiur, that the Mishnah says is beneficial, that when you give her something that has a definite pruta value, then That creates Kiddushin Gemurim and leaving no possibility of a second person extending to her a Kiddushin. We turn back to the Gemara, where we have a new marking, and on the side under the Mivneh heading, Mikrim Shel Kiddushin B'Chafotzim Mi'ute Erech. We're going to see a number of cases as we go through the Gemara where a woman is presented with items of little value. Shechelik mehem lo hoya borur im hu shave pruta. In some of these cases, we are going to we won't be sure whether they had even a pruta worth of value. The Gemara, hahu gavra de aktish b'avna de kuchla. It was a man that gave a woman, Avna de Kuchla, some type of dark-colored marble stone. Yosef Rav Chista, we must correct ourselves, we read a little bit too far into the Gemara. Let's just go back a couple lines. The first word online, you'll notice with a crown shape around it, Hahu Gavra, the Aktish Bezavda de Ordi. It was a man that gave a woman a clump of soft material. Rashi describes it as an aguda, a material that's bound together. Shel muchin, muchin is soft material. So he gave her this clump of soft material. Yosef Rav Simi Bar Chiya Kamei de Rav. Rav Simi was seated in the presence of Rav, and he was analyzing, looking at it, studying it. I is ba shaver puta in, I lo lo. If this clump of material has a shava pruta value, it's worth a pruta, she's married. If not, she's not married. The Gemara asks, "Viles ba shava pruta lo?" And if it doesn't have a pruta worth of value, you're telling me she's not married? But we just heard Shmuel before saying that even if it doesn't have a value of a pruta, we still suspect maybe she is married to the first, to this fellow. Lo kashya ha b'kiddushay vaday ha b'kiddushay safek. What Rav Simi was trying to establish was kiddushay vaday. In other words, if it has a pruta worth of vow, she's definitely married to the first, to this fellow. If not, then she is married to the first fellow on a safek level, the element of doubt. And as we said before, that would leave room for a second man to come along and offer her kiddushin, and if he were to do that, she would not be allowed to be with him either, because maybe she is considered married to the first fellow because of the consideration of Shmuel that the item might have a pruta worth of value somewhere else. Hahu gavra da'aktish ba'afna de'kuchla. There was a man who offered a woman a dark marble-colored stone. Yosef Rav Chista v'ka Mishayer Lei. Rav Chista sat there and analyzed the value of that stone. Now, a very important piece of information is necessary, and that is that after the woman received the Avna de Kuchla from the first man, someone else came along and gave her a definite pruta worth of value. According to the girsa that you see in an alternative girsa, and you find this explanation in Tosis as well, the second fellow that will be spoken of is actually the brother of the first man. So Rav Chista sat there and was mishayerle, was estimating I is be shove pruta in, if there is a shove pruta worth of value, so she's married to the first man. Elo, lo. And if it doesn't have a shava pruta worth of value, she's not married to the first man, but rather she is married to the second man. Question. V'iles be shava pruta lo. And if the stone doesn't have a pruta worth of value, are you saying with assuredness that she's not married to the first one? V'homar Shmuel chayshinon. But according to Shmuel, we have to suspect maybe she is married to the first one. So how can you, Rav Chista, rule that if there is no shava pruta worth of value in this dark stone, the blue-colored stone or whatever, that she is definitely married to the second man? How can you say that? Don't you have to suspect that maybe the Avon de Kuchla was worth a prut somewhere else? Rav Chisda lo sovar lo de Shmuel. Rav Chisda simply doesn't hold from Shmuel. The idea of suspecting that it's worth a prut of somewhere else is not something that Rav Chisda considers. We've used a special double underline marking to highlight what we indicate on the side, Shlilas Shitos Shel Hasheni. You'll see various opinions that reject former opinions. Here Rav Chisda is rejecting Shmuel. Later, when we get to Amud Beis, you'll notice that Abaye and Rava, they reject Rav Chisda. We continue. Omra le ime. The mother of the fellow that gave the woman the Avna Kuchla, she spoke up and said, Vahu Yoma, the Kotcha, the day that that my son married the girl with the stone, Havabe Shavar Pruta. It had a Shavar Pruta worth of value. Rav Chisda disregards what the mother just said. The mother of the fellow that gave the stone to the bride. Omar Law. And now Rav Chisda goes on a presentation, a speech that will take you to the fourth line from the top of Omid Beis. By the way, if you need to access marked Gemaras, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. So now Rav Chisda says to the woman, Lav kol kaminoch de asris lo abasra. It's not within your power to forbid her to the second man. In other words, if I analyze the stone and I come to the conclusion that it's not worth a shovah pruta, I rule, I paskin, that she is now the wife of the second fellow, the one who gave her a shovah pruta, a definite shovah pruta value. It's not in your power, says Rav Chisda, to provide information like you did that would have prohibited her to the second fellow by saying that the day that she got married the stone had a pruta worth of value. And Rav Chisda says there's precedent for what I'm saying. Lav hainu, is this not the story of Yehudis Devisu de Rabbi Chia? Yehudis was the name of the wife, Devisu, the wife of Rabbi Chia. The Havis lo tsar leido, she had great pains, she experienced great suffering in her giving birth. She actually gave birth to twins, and the Gemara describes elsewhere that they were born 3 months apart. If you're going to ask how that could be, so that's discussed elsewhere in the Shas. But she had great trouble in giving birth. And women will say things indicate their displeasure with their husbands when they are giving birth. And Omra Le, Yehudis, the wife of Reb Chia, said to Reb Chia, Omra Li Aim, my mother told me, Kibel Beich Avuch Kidushi Kizutras, that your father accepted Kiddushin from some other man when you were very young. This is what the wife of Reb Chia is telling Reb Chia while she's experiencing these birth pains, that I'm not even allowed to be married to you. I was married as a child to someone else, and that information I got from my mother. Omar Law, Reb Chia says, Lav kol kamino di imoch. It's not within the power of your mother, the asrus leich iluvoi, to prohibit you to me. And so in that spirit, as you could see, Rav Chia's response that a woman coming along post facto telling us information that that's either not known to us or doesn't jive with the given facts of that are in front of us, we disregard that kind of information. Amri le Rabbonon le Rav Chisda. Amai, why are you so quick to disregard the possible value of the stone, the Avne Kuchla, as having a Shavar Pruta worth of value? The Rabbonin say, Ho Amri Ikar Sadi Beidis. Idis is the name of a place. People are saying that there are witnesses in Idis. The Yadi Debahu Yoima Have Be Shavu Pruta. That on that day that the first fellow married the woman with, you know, by offering her the stone, the witnesses, they're right now in this place called Idis, but they could testify that on the day of the marriage that took place over here, they know that it had a Shavu Pruta. So why are you, Rav Chista, willing to disregard the possibility? And as according to your approach, if you don't find it to have a Shavu Pruta in value, she is married to the second fellow, according to Tosis, the second brother that gave her a Shavu Pruta in marriage. But why? Why are you so sure of yourself that if you don't find it to have a Shavu Pruta, when there are in fact witnesses in Idis that could testify that on the day of the marriage to the first man who gave her the blue marble, it had a Shavu Pruta? Rav Chista responds, Hashta miha lesnehu kamon. Right now, those guys, those witnesses, are not in front of us. They're somewhere else. And this idea of witnesses being somewhere else, and hence not able to affect our case over here, is illustrated in the following. Before we go into the illustration, it's important for just a word of background. There's a story involving the daughters of Shmuel that were taken captive. Taken captive by Gentiles. And a woman who's taken captive by a Gentile is assumed to have had intimacy with them, and that would prohibit them from then eventually marrying a Kohen. If, however, and all of this information is found in Maseches Ksubis, if you have a situation where a woman comes forth and says, I was taken captive, but I remained undefiled, we believe her. That's called Pesha, Osar Pesha Hiter. Literally the mouth that prohibits, by saying that I was captive, that's information that's negative for your cause. But you're the source of that information. You're the one who's telling us that you were taken captive. Therefore, we will, if we're going to believe you for that, we're going to believe you also to say that you remain undefiled. So a story involving the daughters of Shmuel, where they came to Rabbi Hanina and they told him, you know, we were taken captive, but we remain undefiled. And Rabbi Hanina was matir them, they allowing them to marry Kohanim. So in that story, Rav Chista here makes reference to that story. Lav Hainu de Rabbi Hanina is the case you are describing with the witnesses in Idis not similar to the case involving Rabbi Hanina? Diyam Rabbi Hanina. Rabbi Hanina, after when he was matir the girls, the daughters of Shmuel, he was told, how can you allow them to marry Kohanim? What are you basing yourselves on? Are you basing yourself on the fact that they are the ones that revealed their captivity? But there are witnesses out there that knew that they were taken captive, so that we could have discovered their captivity even without their sharing the information, without their revealing it. And if that be the case, so you don't have the ability to be mekil, to rule leniently based on Pesha Osar Pesha Hitir, based on your introducing the negative, and therefore will also rely on your revelation of the positive, because you're not the source of the negative anymore once there are witnesses that could have revealed to us the negative, the fact they were taken captive. So when this was argued, told to Rabbi Hanina, how can you be so lenient? Are there not witnesses out there that know about their having been taken captive? So Rabbi Chanina says back, to justify his own ruling, a deha b'tzad istan v'te'aser. There, just because there are witnesses out there, b'tzad istan is a reference to the north. They're, so what? There are witnesses somewhere in the north. They haven't come to us to testify about the daughters of Shmuel having been taken captive. They're out there. And just because they're out there, I should prohibit the daughters of Shmuel from being mutaros, to marry Kehanim. So with the using that precedent, Rav Chista says, just because there are witnesses in Edis that could testify that on the day that the first fellow married her with the blue marble, that it had a pruta worth of value, but they're not over here testifying. They're out there. Based on this, Rav Chista, after he discovered that the Avne Kuchla did not have a pruta worth of value, her marriage to the second one, to the brother, is the marriage. That's a kosher binding marriage, as far as Rav Chista is concerned. Abaye v'Rava lo svir lehu l'ha de Rav Chista. Abaye and Rava, however, did not accept Rav Chista to matir her to the second man. Why not? Because Abaye and Rava considered the fact that there were witnesses in Edis that could have testified that the stone that the first man offered her was the Kedushin, because it had a pruta worth of value on the day she was married with it. As far as the story involving Rabbi Chanina, who did not consider the witnesses out there, so Abaye and Rava tell you, that's different. Im hekilu b'shivuya, that was a case of witnesses that could have testified that she was, that the girls were taken captive. And then, if that would have been, so then I, as we said, we wouldn't have been relying on the word of the women themselves. But nevertheless, Abaye Rava say, if we rule leniently in the case of captive women, diminavlo nafsho gabi shaboy, a woman will most likely resist intimacy with her captor. Minavlanav, she makes herself repulsive. She'll do anything to make herself repulsive to the captor so as to avoid the intimacy. So that the fact that there's information she was taken captive, that in and of itself doesn't mean she was definitely party to intimacy. And there's reason to think, in fact, there was no intimacy because of Minavlanavsha. She would make herself repulsive, Gabi Shaboy, in the face of the captors. So there's room to, in fact, rule leniently. I mean, saying, even if there are witnesses out there that they were taken captive, still, even with their testimony, we wouldn't know for sure that there was an act of intimacy. So there's a basis for ruling leniently in the story with Rabbi Chanina. However, over here, Nakil Beatius Ish, should we by the same token be lenient on a ruling concerning a woman's status as being a married woman? There are witnesses in the Rav Chista story in Idis that could testify that the stone was worth a shofar bruta. If that be the case, she'd be an Eishes Ish vis-a-vis the first man. She'd be married to the first man. And how can you, Rav Chista, be so assured to allow her to marry the second man who gave her a pruta, if you discover on your through your own investigation that the Avne Dekuchla doesn't have a shaveh pruta? But there are witnesses in Edis that could have testified that on the day she was married, the stone that she was given did have a shaveh pruta. So Abaye and Rav are not going to be so lenient or so willing to matir her to the second man, the second brother. in the story involving Rav Chisda, as we said, there was a heter that he gave regarding her marriage to the second man, and there were children from that marriage. There remain descendants from that family in Surah. That family, namely the woman who was given the heter to marry the second man, Uparshu Rabbanan Minan, the rabbis kept their distance from that family. They would not marry into that family. Velav Mishum Dishmuel, not as a result of holding like Shmuel, namely suspecting that maybe somewhere else the item has a pruta worth of value. Ela Mishum Desviro Lahu Kabaya Varova. The Rabbanan that we said stayed away from marrying that family, marrying into that family, is because they held like Abaye and Rava, namely that the woman who married the second man was really married to the first man based on the approach Abaye and Rava took, that took into consideration the witnesses in Idis that could have testified that the Avne Kuchla offered to her by the first man really had a Shofar Pruta. And if you're going to then take that into consideration, she had no business marrying the second man, but she did, and had children who would be mamzerim, and hence the Rabbonon stayed away from that family. Hahu Gavra de'aktish b'shutisa de'asa b'shuka. It was a man that married a woman by offering her a stem from a myrtle bush. A branch of myrtles. Myrtle branch is what he offered her in the shuk. And the shuk is a public place, a market. So it was a man that married a woman by offering her a branch from a myrtle bush and he did this in public. Shocha Rav Acha Bar Huna Lekamei de Rav Yosef. Is the woman considered married? So the question was sent to by Rav Acha to Rav Yosef, Ki hai gavna mai? In this case, what are we to rule? Sholach le, so Rav Yosef responded, Nagde kerav, v'itzterich gita kishmuel. First of all, administer lashings to this guy. We'll see why in a minute. But we will require the man who gave her this seemingly insignificant item, a branch of myrtle leaves. Nevertheless, we're going to suspect that they are considered married, even though over here it's not worth a shofar puta, but maybe somewhere else it is worth a shofar puta. That is in accordance with Shmuel, who said, Chayshinon Shema Shofar Puta B'modai. That was in the story with the date. The same ideas applied over here. You notice we have a long bracketed section. If you skip the long bracketed section, you notice we then move on to a new case. Ahu Gavro de Kodesh Bitsipsa Dasa. So that the brackets are not really designed for skipping, because if you skip them, you simply run into a new case. It's not a continuation of what we're discussing now. So our note on the side, you notice we have a starred note in the margin that reads Sograim Elu Einom L'Shem Dilug. The purpose of these brackets is not for skipping, Elo, the Tachemus HaKeta Sheboi HaGemara Isekis B'Divrei Rav, simply to delineate the boundaries of the Gemara that deal with Rav's teaching. Rav indicated, or in the name of Rav, it was indicated that the man who gave her in marriage, who married her with a myrtle branch, deserves to be lashed. Let me just repeat that. The man who presented to the woman a myrtle branch in the shuk as an act of marriage deserves to be lashed. And now let's continue with the bracketed section. The Rav Mangid, Rav would administer lashings, and here we have a list of things. There are six things. The first part of the list deals with matters that are, let's say, marriage and divorce related. But the second part of the list, four, five, and six of the six items, are related to other points of other areas of law. But in all these instances, Rav would administer as a punishment lashings. So number one, al de mekadesh b'shuka. We dashed underline the word b'shuka. This is essentially the reason that this bracketed section appears here. It's because Rav found it abhorrent for a man to offer marriage to a woman in the middle of the market. It's a severe lack of respect. Later, we'll see the concept of priestess introduced, licentiousness. Let's go on in the Gemara. What else would Rav lash for? V'al de mekadesh b'biyah. A man who marries a woman, even though the Mishnah acknowledges its effectiveness, i.e., marrying a woman through intimacy, Rav says that should not be done. It works, but it should not be done. V'al de mekadesh b'lo shiduchi. And one who would marry a woman upon meeting the woman without discussing beforehand. Shiduchi is a reference to discussions prior to marriage. And by the way, you notice that we have the number one with subsections Aleph, Beis, and Gimel. These are all part of what we call number one. We said there's 6 points. Number one contains 3 points within it. So this third point under number one is one who marries. These are all, let's say, lashings for problematic kiddushins, problematic marriages. Mekadesh b'shuka, mekadesh b'biya, and mekadesh without shiduchi, a man who meets a girl and without discussing any issues of their getting married, automatically just pops out and says, "Here, take this money. I want you to marry me." And she agrees to. Fine, she agrees to it, but it's not the right way. Number two, v'al de mevatil gita. There's a discussion in the commentaries of what this is. The approach taken by the Tosis Riha Zokein is what I want to present in this shiur. We'll find it on the first wide line of the Tosis Riha Zokein commentary. You'll find them under the Tosis commentary, and there, let's read it together. The Mevatel Gita. What happened? Sheshalach get lishto. A man sent a divorce document to his wife. The kodem shiagia get lishto. And before the agent carrying the get to the man's wife, before it reached the wife, bitloi bifnei shnayim, the husband declared the get that was sent currently en route void. He was mavatil it. He canceled the get before it reached his wife. And that is something that if a person does that, they deserve to be lashed. Why? Venofik me churba, a catastrophe will result. Shashliach halech, venoisnoi law, the agent is not aware of his having been mavatel the get, of the husband's cancellation of the get. The agent will go give the woman the get. Vehi halechas venises, and she goes and marries a second man. Venimseis venimsa get batel. But the get, in the meantime, the divorce from the first husband is void. She's still married to the first man. Ubonei ha-mamzerim, the children she bears with the second man, are illegitimate. Rashi has a different approach, but this is a simple approach without getting into difficulties. Because if you learn the Rashi approach, and you'll then notice Tosfos has a strong question on it, so we'll just stick with this pshat of the Tosfos Ri Hazokein. Let's continue in the Gemara. Number three, V'al demoser moido agita. This involves a person who was being forced by the court to give a divorce to his wife. Why the court would intervene, that's beyond the realm of our discussion. But a man who was made obligated to divorce his wife, and before he issued the instruction to write the get, this man turned to two witnesses and says, "You know, I'm gonna be subject to duress and made to write a get, and I want you to know that that get that I will be preparing is void." That's called Moiser Meida Agita. Whether or not that is effective is questionable. There's whatever the case is, even if you say that it's effective, so then the get eventually will be written, given to the woman. In the meantime, he voided it by being Moiser Meida, and her marriage to a second man would lead to Mamzerim. There is, however, a discussion by the Tosfos Rid, who disagrees with what Rashi says about this. The Tosfos Rid actually says the pshat that we just gave. Rashi, on the other hand, said that the moda is ineffective, and the get becomes a valid get, and she could marry someone else, but people will think that she's not really divorced, and it'll cast a bad name on the children that she has with the second man. Let's continue in the Gemara. Number 4. Vial, what else would Rav lash for? The Mitzar Shlucha de Rabbonan. A Shlucha de Rabbonan is a man sent by the court to summon someone to appear in front of the judges. The summoned individual, if he is Mitzar, and here you have a machlokas, the Rashi and the Rashba. The Rashba explains he is mitzayer with words. He, we say in the colloquial, we say he curses out the court agent who was sent to summon him to appear. Rashi speaks about the individual being summoned actually hits the Shlucha de Rabbanan. Rav will administer lashes to he who causes oppression, suffering to the court agent. Number 5, the Al Dechola Shamta Iluya Talsin Yomin. Someone who is put into excommunication and he doesn't seek the court's forgiveness and remains in the state of excommunication for 30 days. Person like that deserves to be lashed. Number 6, the Al-Chasna Dedayer Bei Chamua. A son-in-law who lives in the same house as his wife's mother. He lives with his mother-in-law. There's an idea that, contrary to maybe contemporary thinking, there is a very close relationship, a sense of fondness between a mother-in-law and her son-in-law. Could be that the characteristic of the strain between mother-in-law is one of mother-in-law and daughter-in-law, and there's Talmudic basis for that found in sugyas that deal with Eidus Isha. But without getting involved with that, the Gemara feels that the mother-in-law son-in-law relationship is one that one has to be wary of, and it's not a healthy situation for a son-in-law to live in the home of his wife's mother. If that is causing anyone to raise their eyebrows, there is a Tosfos that we can rely upon nowadays for accepting a situation where a son-in-law lives with his wife in his mother-in-law's home. But that's not the focus of our discussion right now. You notice there's an angular brackets. Within the angular brackets, the Gemara questions the way we presented the matter of son-in-law, mother-in-law. That having been said, let's read the internal brackets. Are you saying then the Dayarin Choleflo that the only problem is a son-in-law that actually lives in his mother-in-law's home, but if he passes by, that's not a problem. There was a story involving a son-in-law that simply passed by the door of his in-law's house. The Nagdei Rav Sheshes, and Rav Sheshes lashed that guy. The Gemara says that's a very exceptional case. Ahu made them have a daimel chamse mine. There was already murmurings about foul play between the mother-in-law and son-in-law in that case, and there were murmurings, and therefore he should have kept his total distance, not just avoid living there, but totally distancing himself from there. Nardoi Amri Bekulu Lo Mangid Rav. Nardoi, in viewing the list above, says that Rav would not administer lashings Elo Al De Mekadesh Bebiya Belo Shiduchi. He would administer lashings concerning one who would Mekadesh Bebiya, marry, as we saw above in the list, one base, and one who is Mekadesh without Shiduchi. V'ikar d'amri afilu b'shiduchi. Let me go over this again. According to the first opinion, Rav would administer lashings for someone who would marry a woman through Bia without having discussed their marriage beforehand. In other words, a man meets a woman and he says, let's have intimacy together for the purpose of marriage. And even she, of course, agrees. Nevertheless, Rav would lash for that type of behavior. That's considered lewd and licentious, that a man's initial contact with a woman that he hasn't even discussed marriage with would be through an act of intimacy. V'iko d'amri, another version of Nahardoi is, V'afilu b'shiduchi nami, even if they did discuss marriage before his intimacy with her, that's still unacceptable. Mishum pritsusa, because of a behavior that we call pritsus, licentious, that a man's first contact with a woman should not be through intimacy, but marry her through the other means, kesef or shtar. There's a discussion in the Tosfos as to what the priestess is. We gave one pshat. The Rabbeinu Tam has another pshat, but his approach is questioned. For more information, you can see this in the Tosfos. The pshat that we suggested, you can see in the Tosfos as well, in the name of the Ri, following the Rabbeinu Tam, which we said is questioned. We continue in the Gemara. Hahu gavra de kodesh betzifsa de asa. It was a man that offered a woman a mat made of myrtle branches. Omru lay, they said to the man, "Ha less ba shavar pruta. The thing is not worth anything. It's not worth even a shavar pruta." Now, in the meantime, the woman received this mat. She we hear that it's not worth a shavar pruta. Omar lahu. So the man says, and from the story you'll see, while the woman is already holding the mat, he says, "Okay, but tiktush ba'arba zuzi de'is ba. Let her be married with the four zuz that are woven into the mat. If you unravel the mat, you'll find there's four zuz, four coins in them." Shaklusav ishtika. She kept holding it, but remained silent. Omar Rava, there is no marriage. Havashtikusa de l'achar matan mois. This is silence after the item, mos, literally the coin. It's the after the kesef kiddushin was given to her, after the mat was given to her, then she remained silent. The chol shtikus v'achar matan mois lav klum hi. Silence that follows an initial giving where there was a lack of value, and only after it was given, new information was presented. In other words, information or facts that were revealed after the Kesef Kiddushin, after the money, after the item was already given to her, her initial receipt of the item was without that awareness. That's called Shtikusa, her silence after the receipt. And her silence after receipt is not viewed as agreement, as acceptance. It's nothing. Let us take a look at the Rashi. Rashi that we're looking at is five lines before they become wide, at toward the bottom. Shaklasa klomar noktolo velo yishlachta vishtika. The mat, she remained holding it. She didn't toss it away, but she remained silent. Rashi continues, havishtika delachar matan mois. She mitchila kishikiblasa. Initially, when she received it, vamois hayu basecha, and the money was woven into it. Lo yada behen, she was not aware of them. Ukshiyada achar kain vishaska. When she became aware of that afterwards and remained silent, it's silence after the money was given to her. And that's not meaningful. It's not worth anything. Her silence, because she just simply didn't care. Meimar omra, she figured, initially when I received the item, I didn't receive it with that in mind. So the fact that it's revealed later that there was actual value, and she didn't throw it away, that doesn't indicate her acceptance. And Rava then tells us a rule that all shtika that's achamat mos is nothing. Omar Rava mino aminola. You'll notice we have a triangle marking, and on the side of the Gemara, after presenting the topic of shtika v'achamat mois ein oklum, the mivneh, the structural note, presents the triangle as a ma'akav. They attempt to keep track of a give and take style Gemara, with the point facing up. Chipus moker, we're searching for a source for Rava's idea, an earlier source, a Tanaic source, and the inverted triangle that will appear on daf yud gimel amud aleph indicates a rejection. You'll find a double underline after we present this first attempt. The double underline highlights stages, highlights the words Elema and Ela. These are Shlave Birur Ma Pirush La Rotsa Eino Mikudeshes. There's an expression we'll see in this source that's not clear and it requires some clarification. So we'll clarify, but in a couple stages. The Gemara. Omar Rava Mino Aminola, how do I know this principle of Shtikusa Lachamois Lav Klumhi? The Sanya. Omar Law Kinsi Sela Zu Bafikodon. Man says to a woman, would you kindly take this coin, Sela is a type of coin, and keep it for, watch it for me. Pikodon is entrusting the item to her for safekeeping. The Chozar, the Omar Law, after she accepted the coin for safekeeping, he then says to her, you know, Hiskachilibo, keep the coin, be married to me in exchange for your keeping the coin. Bishas Matan Mois Mikudeshes. If before she received the coin, he said to her, you know what, take the coin as Kesef Kiddushin, so then she's married. The Achar Matan Mois, if after she had received the coin, which she took initially for safekeeping, Rotsa Mikudeshes, Lo Rotsain Mikudeshes. Here we have words that the Gemara has to define, but if you translate them literally, Rotsa Mikudeshes means if she agrees, she's married, and if not, then she's not. My Rotsa, my Lo Rotsa, so what do these words really mean? I Lema Rotsa De Omra In. Lo Rotsasa, the Omra Lo. If you translate the words Rotsasa as meaning yes, and Lo Rotsa meaning a verbal expression of negativity, meaning I do not want, So in the Seifa, this distinction appears. Namely, in the Seifa that says, Li'achar Matan Mois. So this distinction is made. Michlal de Resha, that would leave room for us to infer that regarding the Resha, where it said, Bishas Matan Mois, Mikudeshus, no distinction was made between her Rotsasa and La Rotsasa. And if you're going to explain the terms as we did, so then in the ratio where there was no distinction, it would come out ki omra lo nami havu kedushin amai v'hokomra lo. In the ratio where no distinction was made, the ratio simply ruled across the boards in an unqualified fashion mikudeshes. That would seem then to include even if it was lo rotsa, even if she said no. But how could that be? And as the Gemara at the top of Yud Gimel Amud Aleph says, Ki Omro Lo Nami Havu Kedushin, how can you say that? Amai V'ho Komro Lo. So the Gemara continues on the second line from the top of Yud Gimel Amud Aleph, Elo Lav, rather, the explanation of the source must be, Rotsasa Tiyomra In, a verbal acknowledgement, a positive statement, yes, I want the money as kedushin. Lo rotsa, the ishtika mishtika. Lo rotsa means she remained silent. So now let's go over the case again. We have the Tanaic source, which a man presented a coin for safekeeping, and the source said, "La'achar matan mos, after the receipt of the coin." Rotsa Mikudeshes, if she says, yes, I'll keep the coin for marriage, so then she's married. But if Lo Rotsa, if she remains silent, no marriage. So what have we described? We described Shtika Li'achar Matan Mois. The coin was presented to her initially, not for marriage purposes, for safekeeping. So now, after she's already holding onto the coin, he introduces the marriage possibility, and she remains silent. She's not married. That's, in the meantime, the basis for Rava. And as the Gemara says on the third line from the top, Ushma mino, shtiko, de'achar matan mois, v'lo klumi. Notice the inverted triangle. We're going to challenge this. Koshu ba b'fum nara mishmei de Ravuna. Pum nara is the name of a place. In Pum nara, in the name of Ravuna, b'reid Rav Yeshua, they questioned this, say, source. Mi domi. How can you compare the silence in the case of the woman who received the coin for safekeeping to the case of the woman who received the mat for the purpose of marriage? How can you compare the cases? Hasam b'teras pikadon yahavinu nihala. In the case of the Tanaic source, she was given the coin for safekeeping purposes. What do you expect of her now? Expect of her to when the man introduces the marriage possibility, she should, if she's objecting to it, she should what, throw it away? Savra, she figures, Isha Dina Lahu, if I throw it away as a sign of my objection to the marriage, Umisbiri, and it breaks, it's lost, Mechayavna Bahu, I'll have to pay out of my pocket for it. After all, I initially accepted it for safekeeping, so I had an obligation to ensure the well-being of the item. If I toss it away, then I'll have to compensate for that. So it's better I'll just keep quiet. So her silence there is understandable as a expression of disinterest in the marriage. Ha ha! In the case of the mat that Rava wanted to say she's not married, but nevertheless, she should have tossed it away. Ha b'toras kedushin yavinu nihala. It was given to her not for safekeeping, it was given to her as an act of marriage. If she really found displeasure in the offer of marriage, she should have thrown it away. And the fact that she didn't throw it away, that according to this approach, indicates her acceptance of marriage. And notice the triangle now with the point facing up. And as such, so this would then reinstate Rava's approach, that the source with the Selah, Pikaron, is a good source for illustrating Shtika the Achamat Moslav Klum. Porach Rav Achoy. So Rav Achoy challenges what was just raised in Pum Nara as an objection. He says, Atukulu Noshi Dino Gemiri, what are all women experts in law? And are all women expected to know that, well, since she didn't accept it for safekeeping, she would not be guilty anyway to compensate if it gets lost or gets broken? If we look at Rashi, just a couple lines up from here, Dino Gemiri V'yada, and you expect her to know, Kevan de lo kibla netirusa lo, since she didn't accept initially the item for watching, she didn't accept responsibility, Shadilu lo techayev, if she throws it away, she won't be responsible. Hachi nami, we continue in the Gemara, Hachi nami, where it was given to her as Kedushin, and not as a Pikadon, she also figures Savra Isha Dina Lahu Misbri. If I throw it away as a formal proactive expression of rejection, and it breaks, Mischayav no Bachrisayu, I'll have to compensate for it. I'll have to make good on its loss. And that's why she didn't throw it away, even where it was offered to her for Kiddushin purposes. Sholcho Rav Acho bar Rav lekamei de Ravino ki haigav no mai. So the question was presented to Ravino. How should we rule in this case? The woman was given a mat. It didn't have a shofar pruta worth of value to it. After she's holding it, she's told it has coins woven into it that have sufficient value, and she didn't throw it away. Is she married or not? Sholach lei, so Ravina sent back. Anan lo shmi'alon ha de Ravuna bre de Rav Yoshua. We didn't hear what Ravuna bre de Rav Yoshua said, namely the distinction that was made. Rashi adds here that we didn't hear from him, nor did we hear anyone say in his name that distinction. So from our perspective, it's a straightforward case. Even though she received it initially for marriage purposes, we don't expect the women to be expert in these legal distinctions, and her lack of tossing it away, her maintaining possession of it, was not an acquiescence and an admission to marriage. Atun de shmi'alachu, you, however, who were familiar or were informed of a distinction made by Rav Huna Braid Rav Yeshua between the cases, so choshula, you'll have to consider it, and in order for her to be allowed to marry someone else, she will need a get, a formal divorce from the first man, because of her maintaining holding of the mat. Before we conclude, let us remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us in order to access Marked Gemaras, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.